Morning. Today's daf in Kiddushin is Ayin Dalet. We are starting today on the very bottom of Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph. Last words on the Amud. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is learned. We're talking about Shesukin Asufi. Still takes us all the way back to the Mishnah on Samech Tes. Mishnah on Samech Tes Amud Aleph describes that there are 10 different categories of people that went up with Ezra from Babel to Eretz Yisrael. So number 9 and 10 on the list are Shesuki and Asufi. Shesuki, as we've been discussing, is where he knows who his mother is, but he does not know who his father is. There is a chance, although as we pointed out yesterday in the Gemara, very unlikely, that the father is somebody that would make him a mamzer. But there is a chance. And as a result of that, so this child now has an inferior yichus. And he cannot marry amongst Klal Yisrael. The Shesuki can marry a whole litany of people. The Shesuki can marry his own type, an Asufi, an Asin, a Mamzer, an Evan Meshuchra, a Ger. A lot of people that the Shesuki can marry, but the Shesuki cannot marry Kohen Levi in Yisrael. Nor, as we'll discuss later on, can the Shesuki marry Chalal. But Shesuki can marry a whole bunch of people because of this possibility. Why? If it's so unlikely that his father, whoever his father is, it's so unlikely that he's a mamzer, why can't he marry a Kohen Levi Yisrael? So the Gemara's answer yesterday is Mala Asu B'Yuchsin. Certain chumras that were imposed regarding Yichus, and this is one of them. Similarly, we also talk about the Asufi. Asufi, very similar to the Shesuki, but here the Asufi does not know who his mother nor his father is. So neither. It's basically the same. It's just one more parent added to the list he doesn't know. He was collected. He was collected off the street. That's what the word Osif means. Osif means to collect. So he was collected off the street. He was abandoned. And so now what we're going to be discussing over the course of the next half an Amud of Gemara is the halachas of abandonment. Meaning, it's interesting. We say that he's abandoned, and as a result of that, his yichus is questionable. If we can make an argument that his reasons for being abandoned by his parents are somewhat explainable, I know it's hard to imagine, but if we can give some sort of rationale in terms of why the parents did it, so then he's not going to have the status of an Asufi. He'll only have the status of an Asufi if the parents abandon him clearly with the intent and design of just letting him, leaving him to die. So that's what we're going to be discussing. We're picking it up right now on the bottom of Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph and Amarava Bar Rav Huna. Matzamahu. Let's say you found this baby abandoned, but the baby had a mila. Eimo Mishum Asufi does not have the legal status of being an Asufi. Look at the first Rashi on the top of Ayin Gimel Amud Beis. He writes, "The Yilav de Kashahu lo have a tircha belimim halei." Wouldn't go through the parents. Wouldn't go through the trouble of giving him a mila if they. If he wasn't a kosher. So in other words, the parents obviously endeavored. I understand. There's obviously a built-in limitation to how much the parents endeavored, considering the fact that they abandoned the child, but at least you see that they put some effort in going forward, so therefore the child does not have the status of an Asufi. Mishalte, back to the Gemara, Mishalte had Maya Embo Mishum Asufi. So they used to have a procedure in which they would strain out the baby. So kind of like some sort of chiropractic procedure that was done to the baby. So if you see that this was done to the baby, apparently it was self-evident. So then once again, the parents made some sort of effort in endeavoring to the child, and therefore the child does not have the status of an Asufi. Shaif Mishcho Malikuchla Rami Chumra Talipitka Vitalikima. Then the Gemara gives a whole bunch of other examples of where you see clearly there was some effort put into this baby. It was the baby was rubbed with oil. Some sort of ointment was placed in the eye. They do that with newborns. Rami Chumra. They put some sort of. You're right. Some sort of herbs around the baby, around the neck of the baby. Talipitka, the baby has a note on it. Talikima, or the baby's wearing a kameya. In all these cases, they involve Mishum Asufi. So once again, it's clear that the parents endeavored. So it's a indication that the baby is a kasher and does not have the status of an Asufi. Talibidikla o machile chaya yesh ba Mishum Asufi. If let's say the child was left abandoned, hanging by a tree, or. Not or. If. right? The better conjunction. If it's in a position where an animal can easily get to the baby, so clearly the parents abandon the baby with the intent of allowing the baby to die, and therefore the baby has the status of an asufi. However, if the baby is hanging in a position where the baby is in a secured position, so then the baby does not have the status of an asufi. I know it's hard not to think about Moshe Rabbeinu as he was collected by Bas Paro, meaning, you know, obviously he's not going to have the status of an asufi, but just the construct of, you know, making sure that he was abandoned, but in a position where he's going to be safe and secure.
That's even if they had everything else done.
Right. Zardasa smicha, lamasa. If, let's say, the baby was placed next to a tree, a bush, that was a smich lamasa, that was close to the city. So, yesh b'mishum asufi, so then the child is deemed to be an asufi. If you take a look at Rashi over here, Rashi helps us understand this. So, the zardasa desmich lamasa, the bush that was next to the city, Rashi writes, he talabi ilan sheshmo zardasa. The name of the tree is called the zardasa. The salrir, says Rashi, in Old French. Now, even if an animal can't get to it, still the child is considered a sufi. Why? Rashi quotes the 10th parak of Psachim. Zardasa desmich lamasa lo psicha mishtein shidi. So there are minimally two shadim that inhabit such a tree. And again, whether, you know, we can relate it, we cannot relate to this idea, the intent of the parents when abandoning him, the child, was that basically the baby's going to die. And it probably is, it speaks to the idea that the child probably does not have good yichus. Back to the Gemara, smichta lamasa. If, let's say, baby was abandoned in a shul next to the city, and there's a lot of traffic over there, ain ba mishum asufi. Obviously, the parents left the baby there with the intent of somebody picking up the baby, collecting the baby, and so therefore the child is not a sufi. V'im lav yesh ba mishum asufi. Amar amemar hay pera de sufle yesh ba mishum asufi. If the child was left by a ditch where the date pits are left, now the child has the status of an asufi. So once again, Rashi says that it's really an uninhabited area. It's kind of like by a dumpster. There are not that many people there. And again, the parents left the child there probably to die. And so therefore, if the baby is salvaged, so the child is going to have the status of an asufi. Charifta de nahara ein ba mishum asufi. If the child is left in a by a river, so placed in a basket, put in the river.
Moshe.
Right, and now it's, you know, now the thought of Moshe is unavoidable, inescapable. So the child has a ein ba mishum asufi. The child is not going to be an asufi. The child was, and Rashi again makes the argument, which you have to say, pshat in the Gemara. Or Rashi says that you're going to make the argument that the river is a place where many people frequent, and someone's going to collect the baby, and the intent of the parents was basically somebody else will raise the baby for whatever reasons we can't do so, but the parents did not want the baby to die. So, pashri yesh ba mishum asufi. If the baby was left where the, let's say it was a snow-banked river, and there are not that many people there, so the parents left the child there to die, so the child is an asufi. Tzidei rishos harabim, ein ba mishum asufi. If the child was placed not in the middle of the street, but on the side of the street, what's called tzidei rishos harabim, classically throughout the Gemara, we always have a debate whether or not tzidei rishos harabim has the status of rishos harabim or not. That's regarding the halachas of Shabbos, carrying from rishos yachid to rishos harabim, but we're not discussing those halachas. We're discussing trying to discover intent of the parent. So, if the child was left on the side of the street, so that's not as a dangerous area. That's not basically right in the middle of the street. And so, therefore, the child does not have the status of an asufi. However, if the child was dropped right in the middle of the street, so the parents, now again, you could make the argument that, okay, that's what they want someone else to see it. But still, the parents left it over there basically to die. And so the child, therefore, will have the status of an asufi. Amar Rava. Uvishnei Rava neim ba mishum asufi. Now Rava says, look, if it's a year of famine, so then we have a built-in explanation in terms of why the child was abandoned. The parents simply cannot afford feeding the child, and so therefore they abandon the child, not because of the psul of the child, simply because they can't afford it. Right? The Gemara in Tanis. comes to my mind. The Gemara in Tana says that it is prohibited for a couple to have children during Shnas Ravon. If it's years of famine, the parents shouldn't be having children, just simply it's a difficult time to feed them. So the Gemara says, now this statement of Rava, how the Rava Ahayim, it's going back on which one of the cases we discussed. We discussed over a half dozen cases of what is and what isn't considered an asufi. So this qualification of Ishnas Ravon is going back on what? Ilei Marishos Arabim. So the Gemara says that the child was left in the middle of the street. I did Ishnei Ravon. Ketala Lei. So the Gemara says, okay, and even if it's Shnas Ravon, it's still the intent of the parents is to terminate the baby. So it must be talking about where the child was left on the sidewalk, on the side of the Rishos Rabbim. But the Gemara says, but we already went over the fact that it doesn't even have to be Shnas Ravon, and the child will not have the status of an Asufi. So the qualification of Rava is going on the following. Kol zman shebeshuk, aviv ve'imo ne'emanim alav. Nesaf meneshuk einam en ne'emanim alav. So, if the child is still in the market, and then the mother and the father come and identify that they are the parents, and again, it's tragic, but they just simply explain, we cannot take care of this baby. So the parents have ne'emanis to identify and positively identify that that's their baby. Nesaf meneshuk, but once the child was collected, a ne'emanim alav, so then if the mother and father, quote unquote, mother and father step forward, so they're not going to have ne'emanis. My time, amareva, hol v'yatsa alav shem asufi, because once a child was collected in the marketplace, the child now has the status of a sufi, and once a child has the status of an asufi, you can't have two people, even if they claim to be the parents, remove that status. V'amareva, now we have the clause of Rava. Now, if it's Shnas Ravon, if it's years of famine, so then even after the child is collected, we're still going to afford credibility to the parents so that they could positively identify themselves as the parents, so that the child will not have the status of an asufi. And again, the svara is that during the years of famine, we have a built-in explanation in terms of why it is the parents abandon this child, and therefore they're going to be believed. Going forward now in the Gemara, that ends the discussion in the Gemara regarding the abandoned child. What is an abandoned child? What has the status of an abandoned child versus what doesn't? The common theme, the common denominator of all these Gemaras is that if the child was left to die, so then the child is considered an asufi. If the child was just simply dropped with the expectation someone else is going to pick up the child is not an asufi. And then the last thing we discussed was maybe Bishnas Ravon, we can give a little more leeway in terms of the parents identifying themselves. Going forward now in the Gemara is going to be discussing other issues of ne'emanus, of credibility regarding identification of a child. I'm Rav Chista Shoshan Ne'emanim La'altav Elohim. Rav Chista says that three people are believed immediately, and they are the Asufi Chayu Pateres Chaverta. These are the three cases where a person is extended credibility right away. We're going to go through all three cases. Number one, Asufi Hadamarin. So as far as the Asufi is concerned, so we've already gone over that, meaning that the Asufi can be positively identified by the parents, but only if the parents step forward immediately. Once the child is collected, so then the parents no longer have the ability to identify themselves. That's one. Two, Chaya. We're talking here about a midwife. Titania Chaya Ne'emanus Lomar Zeyatz Arishim V'Zeyatz Hasheni. Now, at the birth, usually the only one there is a midwife. Now, it would be very debilitating if we don't believe the midwife when the children are born. When I say children, let's say it's twins, to make this case very, you know, very visible, very, you know, very intuitive. So now, if we don't believe the midwife, how can we function? It would just simply be impossible that the mom just gave birth to twins, and who came out first? Well, I don't know. Why don't you ask the midwife? Well, we don't believe her. In other words, establishing who came out first is going to establish many halachas regarding pidgin haben, bechor. Okay, so Yerusha. A number of halachas are going to come out from that. If we didn't believe the midwife, it would just simply be impossible. Therefore, there's a special institution the Chachamim gave, a special credibility that was extended to the midwife. So, Zeh Yatzah Rishon v'Zeh Yatzah Sheni. B'medvar Mamorim Shalo Yatzah V'Chazra. Aval Yatzah V'Chazra Einu Ne'emanis. However, the midwife is only believed immediately. After some time, she's no longer believed. And here we have a shear in terms of what is considered immediately. As long as she's still in the room. If she's in the room, so she's believed. Once she walks out and then she comes back in again, she no longer has that credibility. Rabbi Lazar Omer, Chazaka, Huchzaka al Omda, Nemanis, Vimlav, Eno Nemanis. Now Rabbi Lazar says something which sounds extraordinarily similar. If that, if she's standing there, she's believed. If she's not standing there, she's not believed. My Beinayhu, the Gemara says, now we know there's some difference between the Tanakam and Rabbi Elazar in terms of how long the midwife is believed. So what exactly is the difference? So the Gemara says that the difference between the two of them is if and when she were to turn around. So as Rashi points out, Ahadra Apa. Rashi, imuchzika alamdak, imifarshalo ahadra apan emanis. Meaning, according to Rabbi Lazar, the moment, if she's still in the room, but she turned her back to the babies, that's it. She no longer has that credibility. So according to Rabbi Lazar, that credibility that is afforded to the midwife is a very limited credibility. Mashenkin, according to the Tanakam, as long as she's still in the room, even if she turned her back on the babies, she's still going to be believed. And finally, the third halacha where the credibility is given to women, but only immediately, is the following scenario, poteris chavroseha, creating an exemption for her friend, Mahi. So what exactly is that case? So it takes us back to Masechta Nida, Ditnan. Shosh nashim shayu yishenes b'mita achas. Three women were sleeping together in one bed. V'nimsa dam tachas achas mehem. And blood was found under one of them. Now, obviously, during sleep, so there are people, a lot of people moving around. So just because the blood is found under one of them does not necessarily mean that she was the one who discharged blood. So here's what we know. There are three women in the bed. We know that one of them discharged blood. We don't know which one did. So therefore, what are we going to have to say? With that, they all are going to have the status of a nida. So kulan tameos batka achas mehem v'nimtzes tamea he tamea v'kulan taharis. However, let's say immediately upon discovery, one of them does a bedika immediately. So and one of them who does the bedika turns out that she actually, after having done internal examination, finds that she in fact is menstruating. So now she will exempt the other two women, meaning the other two women can now reasonably say, and more than reasonably, halachically, but reasonably say that blood came from her. She, in fact, is currently menstruating.
Did Kenneth come the third time because they shared a bed with her?
So they'll be right. In other words, the nida is metame mishkav. So that means that the bed itself is going to be tame. So they'll be tame, but they won't be tame nida. They'll be tummy just simply because they came into contact with the bed. They'll tov in the mikvah. But in other words, but being tummy nida means 7 days. Right, correct.
How does that prove that the second woman is not tummy?
It's right. It's not a proof positive. Correct. It's that one woman is excusing the others. But you're correct. You could still make an argument that, in other words, two women are menstruating. You could make that argument, but the halacha is that we have enough preponderance of evidence where we're going to say that this woman was the one menstruating. However, as the Gemara is going to qualify now, right now, and that is that she has to do the examination immediately. Amar Chista Shabbat Gatzma Kishir Vest, where she did her examination immediately. Then and only then can we connect the blood on the bed and her. But if she doesn't do the examination immediately, if she does the examination only after some time, and she turns out to be menstruating, that doesn't necessarily mean the blood in the bed belonged to her. Tana Rabbanan. Okay, so those are three examples that were strung together by Rav Chista, where we do extend credibility to people who we don't normally extend credibility to, but only for immediate, it's only for a short-lived amount of time. Okay, the Gemara is now going to continue with discussions of credibility. Tana Rabbanan Emanas Chai Lamar Zeh Kohen Zeh Levi Zeh Nisin Zeh Mamzer. A midwife is extended the credibility where she can identify not only the baby, but the status of the baby. That baby's a Kohen, that baby's a Levi, that baby's in the sin, that baby's a Mamzer. And obviously these four examples over here tells us that the midwife can positively identify the baby both L'Shvach and L'Ra, for good and for bad. Now the Gemara says, but. It's true that the midwife can label and identify the baby, but that's only if that's not running contrary to what others are saying. If, however, it's running contrary to what others are saying, so then we don't believe the midwife. Now, irer demai. The Gemara says, now when we say contrary to what people are saying, so What exactly, what is a contrary opinion? So the Gemara says, if one person is saying, no, the midwife is wrong. So the Gemara says, yeah, but a formal protest has to have at minimum two voices. Anything less than two voices is not a formal protest. So the Gemara says, or maybe we can go back and say, no. One person protested the midwife and ran contrary to what the midwife was saying. And how can that work? When, generally speaking, a formal ear error has to be two people. Yes, it's true that, generally speaking, in order for there to be a formal protest, it has to have two people running against a chazakah. But over here, we're having the baby born. The baby does not have, at this point, at the newest stage of his life, first stage of his life, he does not have the cheskes kashrus. So therefore, even if she's saying one thing, if one person says another, so then that one person is also going to discredit her.
When we say that chazaka is that is rule of children born are kosher,
right.
Then
right, that. Right. That's the nesin and the mamzer is interesting because it's not necessarily something which is shchiach.
Right.
Correct. Correct. So chazaka dekashra na mimhemen. Okay. Next. We're on the bottom of Ayin Gimel Amud Beis. More discussions of Ne'amanus. We're leaving the world of Nashim, Seder Nashim for a little bit. But the common thread, the common thread that ties everything together over here is this idea of credibility. Ne'aman Baal Mekach Lomar Lazeh Macharti Lazeh Ein Macharti. Okay. Let's say a seller sold an item. He's extended credibility in terms of positively identifying who, in fact, bought the item from him. Take a look at Rashi over here. Let's just read a little bit more. So, lezeh macharti, lezeh lo macharti. Bamed v'amamorim bezman shemecho biyado. But that's only when the sold item is still in the hands of the seller. Va'emecho biyado eino ne'eman. But if the item is no longer out of his hands, so he's not going to be believed. Now, let's take a look at Rashi. Ne'eman balamekach. Rashi is four lines from the bottom, right? Sefer Debraisa de la'el. This is a continuation of the Braisa that we saw earlier. Lazeh macharti v'chulei. Im shnai ma'orim malamekach, ze omer macharti li v'ze omer li macharti, v'shali ha'mekach. Obviously, why do we need a credibility statement by the seller? Because two buyers stepped forward and two buyers said, I'm the one who bought the item. So, Ulakam and Mukilash Shtein Nasna Lo Damim. Now, Rashi points out, we're going to say in just a moment in the Gemara, that both of these alleged buyers claim also that they gave money. Kol Echa Ve'echa Damim Shlamim Echa Medata Ve'echa Bakarcho. Now, and by the way, they both did give money. It just happens to be that the seller only willingly sold it to one person, the other person just basically forced the money in the hands, what we would call chamas, right? Extortion. But the as long as the mekach is in the hands of the mocher, he's going to be believed. Let's take a look at the next Rashi, where he explains why should that be. De ramya ala lemedak shalolachzer lo mizeh ulahachzer lo damav v'yitin hamekach lemishalo nimkar lo dekamle b'mishapara hilkach medach dayak. The Gemara, Rashi's explanation of the Gemara goes like this. He's going to be extraordinarily careful in terms of who he sold it to. Because we have a general principle, and Rashi quotes it over here, and we're going to see it as we get into the Babas, and that's the following. That if you renege on a deal after already having agreed to a deal, so and you back out, and this is before the actual transfer of the item, so although you're within your legal right to renege on the deal, but you are now under the following, I guess we can call it a curse. In that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Misha Parah, Midor HaMabel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who extracted punishment from the Dor HaMabel, so who are you from, Mimcha? So he's going to extract punishment from you as well. Not necessarily. Again, when we get to the Babas, we're going to discuss this idea in much greater detail. But the basic idea is that when you have agreed to a deal and now you back out, So even though you're within your right to do so, but it's just simply not, it's not respectable, it's not appropriate. And the Gemara says very clearly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is unhappy with you reneging on your deal. And so the mocher knows that this is the consequence of having agreed to sold something, even though before the actual item has been transferred, but he has agreed to it, and he does not want to renege on this deal, and therefore, that's going to incentivize him to concentrate on who the buyer was, and because we expect him to concentrate so much at that point in time, so therefore, we give him also the credibility to identify who the buyer actually was. And that is only while the item is in his hands. Once the item is no longer in his hands, he's no longer believed. So, where's the item right now? We're going to do one more Rashi together. Ushnim Ochzimbo. Right? Rashi has to say this. That the two alleged buyers are holding the item. If one of the buyers is holding an item, so we have the idea of possession. And possession is most of halacha when it comes to ownership. So both of them are holding on to it. So now they're both holding on to the item. We now look to the seller. You want to tell us who you sold it to? At that point, Eino Neman. Dekevin Delav Alei Ramya, Silo Daik, Limkor Lemihu. So now at this point in time, we only extend this credibility while the item is still in his hands, because at that point in time, he does not want the curse of reneging on a deal. Once the item is out of his hands, so that's it. He gave the item. Now it's a question of who was the buyer? So we're not going to extend the credibility to the mocher in order to make that determination. V'nechzeh, we're now on the top of Ein Dalet, Amud Aleph. Now at this point in time, the Gemara thinks that he only accepted money from one of the two. V'nechzeh zuzi miman naka. Well, let's see who gave him the money. Lo tzricha denaka mitarvayu. So as Rashi told us earlier, but here the Gemara now is telling us, right, the maskana, and that is that both of them gave him the money. And now, one of them gave the money willingly, meaning one of them was the actual buyer, who the seller agreed to sell it to, and the other one was just simply an extortionist, who basically came over before the item was transferred and said, here, I want that item, you're going to sell it to me, here's the money, okay, let's go. Sell it to me. So, v'lo yadia, hai mi daito, v'hai lo mi daito. And now, after the item now is been given over, so now we no longer trust the seller to say, this one gave me the money willingly and that one gave it to me, bal karcho. Okay. Next, this is a continuation of the Braisa discussing extension of credibility. A judge is believed to say that he came out of the court case and he was exonerated and he was found guilty. But again, this credibility that's extended to the judges is only when the Baal Dinim are standing there. But the litigants are not there, so then the judge is not going to be believed. Now, over here, just as an interesting side, generally speaking, Dayanus is done in a basin of three. So if you have a basin of three, so then you have at least two people there, generally speaking. You have three people there who are now going to testify. So there, you don't really need to extend the credibility. The judges certainly are no worse than two Edom. There are three of them, in fact. So most probably, and it's Meduic in the language of the Brisa, because the Brisa says Dayan, which means that we're, for whatever reason, it's only one judge. We learned back in Sanhedrin that that if he's a mumcha, so then he can adjudicate even by himself. Anyway, it most probably is discussing over here one judge. The next is Zechusei Mannakat. So the Gemara says, yeah, but wasn't there some sort of court document written up in terms of this one was found innocent, this one was found guilty? So Lo Tzricha Dekriya Zechusayu. So the Gemara says, well, it was torn up. So in other words, there is no court documentation in terms of who won and who lost. So as long as the litigants are still in the courtroom, the judge is going to be believed. Once they exit the courtroom, the judge has got so much on his mind that we no longer extend that one judge the credibility. Vineder Vinidaininu. So the Gemara says, so now, litigants walked out. they, after walkout, continue to bicker and argue, when of course they are, because they walked into the court bickering and arguing. So they come out of the courtroom, well, who won the case? Well, I did. And the other one says, no, of course I did. And then they now, so once they leave the courtroom, so then the judge is not going to be believed. The Gemara says there's no court documentation. Why not, as a solution to the problem, have them go back into the courtroom and let the judge retry the case? The assumption is that the result is going to be the same result, because the law is the law, and whichever way the judge awarded them the first time, the judge is going to award that same person the second time as well. So the Gemara says, "Beshuda de dine." So the Gemara says, "Yeah, but the judgment over here wasn't based on a simple black and white decision, but it was based on Shuda Dedaina." If you take a look at Rashi over here in terms of Shuda Dedaina, there is a classic debate between Rashi and Tosfos what exactly the definition of Shuda Dedaina, but for our purposes over here, we're just going to stick with Rashi. Rashi writes, "Beshuda Dedaina," I'm reading Rashi, "Bidin Sheinu Tarli Bitam, Ela Hakol Befiv Shel Dayan." There is no sound legal argument that's being presented over here. It happens to be the kind of case where it's not covered under the basic legal system, and so therefore there's more discretion on the part of the judge. Ki ahid ksuvos to amr nechse letuvia vase shnei tuvia shneim krovim shneim shchenim. So the Gemara in ksuvos has the following scenario. We know tuvia is the one who is owed the money, but there are two tuvias, and contextually these two are basically the same. And now it's left for the judge to make the ridiculously hard decision of which tuvia to award it to. V'amrin shuda d'dayne. Now over there, the Gemara says, judge's discretion. Lemisha yisna dev lev hadayin lomer nira li shezeh hayaragal atzlo yoser lezeh. So now the judge's discretion, and Rashi says, what is the judge's discretion going to be based on? He's basically, the judge now is going to turn into basically a Sherlock Holmes. He's going to try to piece together whatever little information he can in order of making basically what is the right call in this case. But we don't know, meaning he's basically going to give his best guess. But it's an educated guess. That's the way Rashi presents it. Now, being that that's the case, we don't want to retry the case, because if we're going to retry the case, well, it's an educated guess. And you know how educated guesses go. Educated guesses change. That is Rashi's understanding of Shuda Dedaina. If you want more on this topic, you don't have to go anywhere else. You can stay here on the daf. And first, Tosfos on the Amud. Tosfos does not like Rashi's explanation. Tosfos gives his own explanation. See Tosfos for more on this topic. Let's continue in the Gemara. Amar Rav Nachman, Shosha Ne'emanim al HaBachor. Three people are believed in terms of a Bachor, meaning, not three people together, meaning, but three individuals are going to have Ne'emanis in terms of identifying who was the firstborn in a family. Elohein. Chaya Aviv Imo, the midwife, father and the mother. Chay La'alter. Now, as we already discussed earlier this morning, the Chai is going to be believed, but only immediately after the birth. Once the Chaya either turns her back or leaves the room, depending on which position you hold, as we learned earlier this morning, so then the Chaya is no longer going to be believed. But at least for the first moments of birth, the Chaya is going to be believed. Imo kol shiva, mom is going to be believed all 7 days. And then aviv la'olam, and then dad's going to be believed forever, for the rest of this child's life. There is a discussion amongst the Rishonim whether dad's credibility and mom's credibility overlap. In other words, is it the pshat that mom is believed for the first 7 days to the exclusion of dad, or mom is believed for the first 7 days and so is dad, and then after that going forward, then dad is going to be believed from that point going forward, Kedetanya. And then the Gemara once again quotes a Braisa, Yakir, Yakiren al Acherim, the beginning of Parshas Kiseitse, where the Torah there discusses having two children, Achas, from two wives, one he likes, one he doesn't like. We discussed this earlier in the third parak. And the Torah says that you have to recognize the first child. But the word yakir that's used in the Torah, the Gemara understands, yakirenu la'acherim, meaning not only does the father recognize the first child, but can communicate the recognition to other people. Meaning the Torah affords credibility to the father to positively identify who is his firstborn. Mikana Rav Yehuda, ne'eman adam lomar zeh b'ni b'chor, u'kshem she'ne'eman lomar zeh b'ni b'chor, kach ne'eman lomar zeh ben grusha v'zeh ben chalutza. V'chachamim omrim ne'eman. Now, How far does this credibility of the father extend? Everyone's in agreement that the father can positively identify who his firstborn is. Can the father also impugn his son? Now, motivation-wise, I don't know why the father would want to do that, but is the father by himself afforded that kind of credibility? So that's the machlokus between the Tanaim of this Braisa.
He cannot impugn himself either. So a child is an exception.
Right, exactly. Excellent point. So according to the Tanakhama of this Braisa, according to Rav Yehuda, so once the Torah gives extra credibility to the father in terms of identifying Bechor, so it extends also to Ben Grusha and Ben Chalutza as well. And yes, it speaks poorly about himself, and how is Rav Yehuda going to navigate through that? It's an excellent question, but that's where Rav Yehuda Shita and the Chachamim say no. The only credibility is to identify which one's the firstborn. But in terms of impugning, in terms of maligning his own son, that he cannot do. Continuing in the Gemara, we are on Ayin Dalam and Aleph, a third of the way down in the Amud Abishal, Hayakor Lishasuke Beduke. As far as Abishal is concerned, this child, where? We know who mom is. And he knows his own mother. He just does not know who his father is. So he is of a inferior yichus. He's number 9 on the depth chart of yichus. And Abishal says, no. He's called the beduki. He's an examined child. Now, my beduki elema shabotki nesimo v'omer slakash nivalti nemenes. So the Gemara says, now what does beduki mean? Now, the simple pshat is beduki is botkin. We just do a simple investigation. And over here, it's very simple. We turn to mom. We say, mom, would you please help us identify who the father is? And she says, gladly. And she then identifies who the father is. Not that we're going to, I understand, child support, being more active at parenting. But the Gemara over here is just focused on one issue, and that is the yichus of the child. So according to Abishal, so that's it. Mom says who the father is, and we believe mom. So the Gemara says, that's great, but the truth of the matter is, Abishal, you're not telling us anything new. That's an opinion that was already expressed all the way back in Ksuvos. First Masecht and Seder Nashim, first Perek of Ksuvos. Remember, Machlokas Rav Yishur and Rabbi Gamliel, they kept repeating itself Mishnah after Mishnah in the first Perek of Ksuvos. And what was Shitas Rabbi Gamliel? Come on, Rabbi Gamliel, so Tanina Chadazimna. So the Gemara over here is bothered, not because it's a wrong position, simply because it's a repeated position. And that is, did not. Haisamu Beres V'amar La Mati V'Shalu Bazer. A woman is pregnant, and we ask her, who's dad? And Amra Lahem Miish Ploni Vekoin Hu Rabbi Gamliel Rabbi Lazar Omer Nemenes Rabbi Yeshua Amar Lomi Pianu Chayin. So a classic machlokes between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Eliezer is on the side of Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel says we believe her, and Rabbi Yeshua says we don't. But meanwhile, all Abishal is doing is telling us we believe her, and we knew that already based on the sheet of Rabbi Gamliel. So why not just simply say Rabbi Gamliel in our Mishnah? Or why does an Abishal say Rabbi Gamliel's right? But what is Abishal doing, basically commandeering a position that's really not his position? And furthermore, in the Gemara and Ksuvos, we already discussed that the halacha falls like Rabbi Gamliel. So what is Abishal doing in our Mishnah, seemingly giving us a repeated position and not crediting Rabbi Gamliel? And what is he doing that is novel? So, well, the Gemara says, well, maybe the credibility that Rabbi Gamliel extends over there in that Mishnah and Ksuvos is only vis-a-vis her, the mother. But maybe there, Rabbi Gamliel is not speaking towards the hechsher of the child. And Abishal in our Mishnah is talking about the hechsher of the child. Well, the Gemara says, well, do you remember the Gemara in Ksuvos? We had this discussion already. And hanich laman da'amar ledivri ha-machsher ba-posa bebita. Laman da'amar ledivri ha-machsher ba-machsher bebita. Abishal mayas la-shminan. And that issue of whether or not Rabbi Gamliel believes her vis-a-vis her, or believes her vis-a-vis her and her child, so that's a machlokas of the Gemara in Ksuvos. Now, if you are of the opinion that Abba Shaul believes her, vis-a-vis her and her child. So once again, we now turn our attention to Abba Shaul. What did you add to this entire discussion? So the Gemara says, the Abba Shaul Adifa Midrash Gamliel. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what Abba Shaul added to the discussion. That's the following. Dime hasam hava mina hasam derev kshem etzla aval hacha derev, sorry, aval hecha derev psulim etzla ema lo tzricha. The Gemara says here. Here's what Abba Shaul is adding. In the case in Ksuvos with Rabbi Gamliel, let's say that most of the candidates of who the father could be are kasher. Let's say that here, by Abba Shaul, he's discussing a scenario in which that the majority of the candidates who the dad could be would determine this child to be a pasul. So in other words, if we went by the principle of Rove, we would say, well, the majority of the people that she's living around would create a pasul child, and so therefore, maybe here we don't believe her. Abba Shaul says, despite the Rove, we're going to believe her. Amarava halachik Abba Shaul, and then the Gemara concludes that in this issue the halacha falls like Abba Shaul. So if the mom identifies who the father is, we're going to believe the mom more than Rabbi Gamliel, meaning Rabbi Gamliel says that we're going to believe her vis-a-vis her. And yes, there's an opinion over there in Ksuvos that says that we're going to believe her vis-a-vis the child. But even on top of that, the Gemara says Abba Shaul here is going one step further. Even against the rove, we're still going to believe the mother. Generally speaking, I mean, he's also the nasi, he's the head of the Jewish people. So, kol asurim lavo bekal mutarim lavo zebezeh. Our Mishnah now, the second Mishnah of the Perek, says something which seems to be repetitive. Anyone who is prohibited to enter into the congregation is allowed to marry one another. Okay. Now, if you remember, right, all the way back to Samach Tes, where we had the first Mishnah. So the first Mishnah taught us, I'm going all the way back to the first Mishnah, the fourth Perek. So the Mishnah says, the Kohen Levi Yisrael Mutam Lavo Zebezeh, Levi Yisrael Chalal Ger V'Charu Mutam Lavo Zebezeh, and then the Mishnah says, Ger V'Charu Re Mamzer Re Nisine Shesuki V'Asufi Kulam Mutam Lavo Zebezeh. So right, and I have right in my Gemara diagram the 10 cases, and cases 5 through 10, right, the last 6 cases of the Mishnah, they're not allowed to marry the first 4, and they're allowed to marry one another. So what we seem to have in our Mishnah over here is a repetition of what we said already earlier. And again, it's offensive, only in that the Mishnahs don't like just simply repeating themselves. There needs to be a Chiddush in our Mishnah, and that's going to be really the bulk of the remainder of today's daf. What is the Mishnah saying that we didn't know or already know? But okay, so we need clarification at that point. Kol asurim lavo bekal mutarim lavo zebezeh, Rav Yehuda oser. And Rav Yehuda says no. And that also needs clarification. What is Rav Yehuda saying no to? Okay. Rabbi Lazar Omer, we're going to get to that. Vada bevada mutar, vada besfekan, besfekan bevada, besfekan besfekan, oser. Rabbi Lazar is of the opinion that if you are in a state of vadai, meaning, if you are absolutely a mamzer, you can marry another person who's absolutely a mamzer. However, a vada can marry a suffik can marry a vadai. One's going on the boy, and the other one's going on the girl, so it's not repetitive. Anyway, a vada can marry a suffik. A vada can marry a vadai, but a vadai cannot marry a suffik. A suffik cannot marry a vadai, and then a suffik cannot marry a suffik. Usfekan besfekan aser. According to Rabbi Lazar, it would be very difficult if you were in a state of being a suffik, meaning, to put it simply, who are you going to marry if you hold like Rabbi Lazar? That's a question which I raise. It's a difficult question. I don't have an answer. Ve'elo heina sfeikos. Now, who's under the category of being a suffik? Shesuke asufi v'kusi. So it's going to be our last two cases of the first Mishnah, where the shesuke, we don't know who the father is. The sufi, the child was abandoned. We don't know who either parent is. So in both of those cases, the child is possibly a mamzer. So in the status of a suffik. And also, a kusi is a suffik as well. We'll talk more about that at a later point in time in the Gemara. Okay. We start off with trying to understand the first half of our Mishnah. Michael Asrim Lava Bakal, what exactly is meant when it says that anyone who's Asr Lava Bakal, Ilema Mamzer Nasina Shesuk Vasufe. So if we're talking about the categories of Mamzer Nasin and the Shesuki and the Asufi, so Hatanale Resha. So we already saw this earlier in the first Mishnah. Mamzer Nasina Shesuk Vasufi Matam Lava Zebazah. So first of all, then, our Mishnah is not telling us something that we didn't already know from the first Mishnah. Vistu Rav Yehuda Oser. And then, on top of that, let's move on to the next point, which is, we have this Shita of Rav Yehuda, and he says, it's Aser. What's Aser? Ahaya, Ilei Ma'avada Mesfeka. So the Gemara says, well, is he saying that what's Aser is Avada Kemari Asafek? Hamidik Tani Sefer Rav Elazar Amar Vadam Avadam Mutar Vadam Mesfekan 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 Aser Mechlad Rav Yehuda Oser Alei. So we know that can't be because Rav Yehuda in the Mishnah comes before Rav Elazar. So in other words, Rav Yehuda is not agreeing with Rav Elazar. It's Rav Elazar who prohibits the Safek to marry Avadai. Rav Yehuda is fine with that. So that's not what he's saying Aser to. So what is Rav Yehuda saying Aser to? V'chitem Rav Yehuda Oser Agir B'mamzeres. So maybe what Rav Yehuda is saying no to is that a ger cannot marry a mamzeres. And you remember this was a couple days ago, the discussion in the Gemara, it's Machlokas, amongst the Tanaim between Rav Yossi and Rav Yehuda, where Rav Yossi says that a ger is allowed to marry a mamzeres. And parenthetically, not such a parenthetical point, we all, the Gemara said that the halakha falls like Rav Yossi. Rav Yehuda says that a ger cannot marry a mamzeres, and maybe in our Mishnah, when Rav Yehuda utters that one word of usr, maybe that's what he's making reference to. The Gemara says, that's all well and good, but where do you see any of that in the Mishnah? Meaning, midi gibra mamzeres ketani, kol ha'asur lava bakal ketani. Yeah, but that we're trying to say a pshat in Rav Yehuda, which quite frankly, we're just constructing because we don't know otherwise, but it doesn't mention ger, doesn't mention mamzeres in the Mishnah. So why would you think that that's what Rav Yehuda is saying when the Mishnah makes no such reference? Amar Rav Yehuda. So, basically, our question is, what's the Mishnah saying? What's the Tanakhama of the Mishnah saying? What is Rav Yehuda in the Mishnah saying? So there are, I counted it up, 1, 2, 3, 4... Okay, 4 different explanations that are given in the Gemara in terms of what the Tanakhama is saying and what Rav Yehuda is saying. Let's go through today the first of the 4. So, Amar Rav Yehuda Achikamar. So, Rav Yehuda the Amara is now going to explain the Mishnah, and this is his explanation. Kol Asurim Lavo Bekal Kahuna. Okay, so when we say Kal in our Mishnah, we don't mean the Kal, the general congregation. We mean Kal Kahuna. That's what the Mishnah meant. So we're talking about a convert. And even though she converted at an extraordinarily young age, now, in other words, obviously her parents, she converted together with her parents, or the Gemara Ksuvos back on Daf Yud Aleph, I believe, hopefully my memory is good. So the discusses where you can have a convert converting with a Beis Din, being the quote-unquote sponsor of the conversion. So the we're a giyaris who's less than 3 years of age, and the and what our Mishnah is saying is that she, even though she converted at such an early age, and she is not a bas bia under 3 years of age, still she is not allowed to marry a kohen. Udelo k'Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, and parenthetically, as we approach Lag BaOmer, and she is parenthetically, and the Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. So Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says is that if you have a convert who converted under the age of 3, she is allowed to marry a kohen. But let's assume right now that our Mishnah is not going like the Rashbi. So mutarim lavo ze bezeh. So they're allowed to marry one another. So in other words, we are talking about a ger. And it doesn't matter at what age she converted, and even if she converted at a very young age, so the this ger is allowed to marry all the psulim, the mamzer and the sin, etc., etc. So basically what Rav Yehuda is doing is he's showing you our Mishnah is actually talking about a ger. That's because when the Mishnah says kal, it means kal kahuna. Okay. Now, v'nukma b'bash shalosh shanim v'yamecha v'afilu Rabbi Shimon b'yochai. Now, the Gemara, just as a point of curiosity, Well, why did you do that? Why can't the Mishnah be talking about a case where she converted above the age of three and have her Mishnah going like the Rashbi? Imkein mitzidia tafra. The Gemara says, yeah, but then the Mishnah is just simply not going to work out. It's broken, the Mishnah, says the Gemara. So, ela time de bashal shamim v'yam echad. Because then the diak is going to be very simple. If she converted above the age of three, she can't marry a Kohen. Ha'pchusimi bashal shamim v'yam echad. Dumater slava bekal kuhuna. So that means that if our Mishnah is going like the Rashbi, if she converted under the age of three, she's allowed to marry a Kohen. So then, asur lavo zebazah. So the, but then she would be prohibited to marry a mamzer. So the Gemara says, but according to the Rashbi, if she converted under the age of three, so yes, she's allowed to marry a Kohen, but she's also allowed to marry a mamzer, meaning she's a Gioris. So right, and we made this point already yesterday. In other words, the convert can marry. Right, according to the Rashbi, a convert under the age of three can marry both a mamzer because it's ena bakal, and also is allowed to marry a convert. So, and that wouldn't fit in our Mishnah because our Mishnah is stating the position that these two are mutually exclusive. So the Gemara says, okay. So, but anyway, what we have in our Mishnah is a pshat. Rav Yehuda's pshat, the first of four. And that is, our Mishnah is talking about Kal Kahuna, meaning a ger. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you know what? This pshat's not going to work out. Because think about what we're saying. If you can't marry a Kohen, you're allowed to marry all these psulim. That's not true. Meaning, take for example, a grusha, a divorced woman. A divorced woman can't marry a Kohen. Is she allowed to marry a mamzer? Of course not. So the Gemara says, so you can't say this pshat in the Mishnah. And they can marry a mamzer, visu, and furthermore, hamutar, aser. And then consider now the idea that the woman who is mutter is going to be also vahare ger she mutter be kohenes or mutter be mamzeres. Meanwhile, a ger is permitted to marry a kohenes. We just discussed it yesterday. A bas kohen is allowed to marry a ger or mutter be mamzeres, and also is allowed to marry a mamzer as well. So it simply does not fit in our Mishnah. Meaning, although Rav Yehuda gave an attempt to explain our Mishnah, and our Mishnah is talking about a ger because the word kal in the Mishnah meant kal kahuna, but it's just simply not true.
Males and females for Kohen? Males and females for Kohen, or just
males? It just means that a mamzer, I'm sorry, a ger is allowed to marry Kohenis. That's the Kohenis is not.
No, but I think when they said Kohen, does they mean both males and females, or is it just males?
No, I mean, it means males. The assumption is males. Okay, so let's quickly wrap up. So we finished the Gemara Ayin Gimel and Beis today. The halachas of what is considered an abandoned child with the status of an asufi versus what is considered an unfortunate circumstance, but the parents expected that someone was going to pick up the child and raise the child. We discussed issues of ne'manus. We talked about who is extended immediate credibility, but only immediate credibility. We talked today about the Sufi, the Chaya, and the three women on the bed where blood was discovered on the bed. We discussed other issues of ne'manus. A seller has limited ne'manus. A dayan has limited ne'manus. And we talked about the parents being able to identify their son, the firstborn. The Chaya is believed, but only immediately. Mom is believed for a week after birth, and dad is believed indefinitely. Question of how much dad is believed in terms of his own children, Machlokas Tanayim. Well, then we moved on to the next Mishnah. The next Mishnah taught us that, I'm sorry, then we went over the sheet of Abishal today. Abishal says that an Asufi is considered a Baduki, meaning we're going to believe mom, not only regarding her own status, but the status of her child as well. This seems to be a repeat of Rabbi Gamliel back in the first parak of Ksuvos. The Gemara says that Abishal goes one step even further than Rabbi Gamliel. And finally, the Mishnah today that talked about the anyone who's Asal of Abakal is allowed to marry one another. Rabbi Yehuda says it's Asar. What exactly is the Mishnah saying? Right now, our current answer to that question is, we don't know. Although Rabbi Yehuda attempted to give a pshat in the Mishnah, the Gemara dismissed Rabbi Yehuda's pshat. So tomorrow we're going to start with number two, and there's going to be a second, a third, and a fourth attempt of explaining our Mishnah.